Hi, it's Dave. Recently, I had the chance of interviewing Chicken Genius Singapore. He runs a YouTube channel about Tesla and investing, and in the past year, it's really blown up. In our conversation, we discuss a wide range of topics from Tesla, Lemonade Insurance, Square, US-China relations, and more. But more than a rigid interview, it's more of a friendly chat between two YouTube creators getting to know each other. I hope it's interesting and helpful. I'd love to hear from you if you have any suggestions on who you'd like me to interview next. You can share your ideas in the comment section or reach out to me on Twitter at HeyDave7. And don't forget to give this video an early like to help it be seen by more people.
Sure.
All right. So thanks for joining. And yeah, welcome to, you know, my channel here.
Hey Dave, it's good to be on your channel. I've been watching for so long. I actually like the content you put out, especially on Tesla. And I do listen to your, like, I know you were the one of the earliest investors in Tesla on in social media, right? I think you went in like really like $30 or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's people who got in earlier, I think at like $20 or $22. But yeah, I got in at, in 2012 for $6 post split. So yeah. it sounds like out of this world, you know, but yeah, Tesla was actually $6 at one point.
Yeah. That was quite a long time back. I think 5 years ago.
Actually 2012, 8 years ago. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I watch quite a few of your videos. I appreciate how you actually like put a lot of effort and time into your videos. Like each video is kind of like a craft, you know. I think it's great.
Yeah, I actually realized that it's a lot difficult to do shorter videos because I do not. Personally, I try to respect time, so to do short videos is a lot harder than doing longer videos like 20 minutes. So I just try to compress anything. So anyway, I think I kind of like that style, so I've been working on that.
Yeah.
It takes more effort.
Yeah, no, I've noticed over the months you're getting, you know, improving your quality of your videos, and it's great.
I try.
Yeah. I was just watching some of your videos today when you first started out, like over a year ago on YouTube, and you even had a video about hair dryers. Yeah. I'm curious.
Sorry, you're saying?
I'm curious, what got you started on YouTube? You know, what was kind of the motivation?
I actually never really wanted to do this full time. I guess I just create videos for fun. But what really drove me really hard was when I see Tesla and all the fad media out there. I decided, hey, look, this is no. So I decided to do some Tesla videos, and people like to watch what I do, and I continue doing what other people like me to do. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I noticed back in like August or October of last year, you had some Tesla videos where your valuation, like you're like, hey, Tesla is way undervalued. Look at the price to sales ratio. And this is like, you know, it's going to go a lot higher over time. And yeah, you were, you hit it on the nail.
I was doing that. Okay. These days, I'm less like doing more. I'm not doing a lot of evaluations because there's a lot of people doing that right now, and they are really good at what they do. But those days, I don't remember a lot of people doing that. So I guess I did my part, and I just really pushed hard to make why Tesla is a really good investment scenario. But these days, you have a lot of sources which are like Troy Tesla or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I can't remember his Twitter handle. Troy.
Yeah. At Teslaic. Yeah. Troy.
Yeah. He does like deliveries compilation, and there are like Gally, he does all that compilation of like his forecast and everything. There are a lot of sources, good sources now. So now I'm just taking the lazy road and, hey, look, these guys, these are the great sources. Look at them.
yeah, definitely. I'm curious, like, were you surprised that your channel has taken off this year?
Yeah, I'm still like quite taken back. I'm still not used to the amount of people watching me. It's like whenever I go out, there's people always like, hi Ken, hi Chicken and stuff. So I'm still not used to that kind of fame, but I always make time to, I mean, I always say hi, take a photo with me or this, I'm fine. Yeah.
Was there like a breakout video you had or a moment where you're like, whoa, this is like crazy?
I guess the breakout moment was my million view video. I mean, I've never shared this, so I basically share something. So I like to work in Starbucks. So that day, you know, I think that day the stock market crash came coming down. That was somewhere in March, and I was really pissed at a lot of people like panicking and selling, and I really wanted to do something to make sure that it looked everything's going to be fine. So I went to Starbucks Reserve. I remember that particular day I went to Starbucks Reserve. I ordered the best coffee, the pour over. So they had to like take like 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
What they're doing, just typing ahead and like, you know, and really try to bring the message across that, you know, it's nothing to panic and stuff. So I didn't know that that could like go viral. But anyway, things happen and here we are right now.
Yeah. For those who don't know, I think you're referring to the video where you're like, buy Tesla right now, to get rich in the recession, right?
Yeah.
So what gave you that conviction, that confidence that you knew that things would bounce back, that conviction to just recommend, you know, Tesla wholeheartedly at that moment, back in March or so of this year?
I guess when you do research into a company long enough, like the way you do your research too, you look at the company for, I mean, I've been looking at Tesla since 2014, 2015, but I didn't really buy into it. I probably like traded it. But when you do that kind of research into it, you realize, hey, look, this is really a no-brainer now. And yeah.
Got it. So it just like, no, I totally relate, because at a certain point, it just becomes so clear, you know, like, wow, this is like, people are underestimating this company, you know, like they don't get it. And there's going to be a limited number of months or time before people, it comes out of the box and everyone starts to understand more of, you know, this company. I totally get what you're talking about.
Yeah, and the funny thing is a lot of people still do not get it. Oh, I just watched that Bloomberg video on Johnson, the Gordon Johnson.
Sure.
Oh, I couldn't finish that video, like, ah, X.
Yeah, I couldn't watch much of his videos either.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a waste of time.
Yeah,
I'm curious, like, with your channel, like, as it grows, like, are you just finding yourself, you know, having to spend more time with this? Is this becoming like more of a full-time thing for you? How do you see your future plans with what you're doing?
I just take it by the day. I mean, I don't really think too much about I mean, my only thought process, I have a very simple thought process for every video I do. It's like, I want to deliver the best content I could. And I always try to get feedback from my audience. So I'll look at Google Analytics and the comments. If I get more dislikes than usual, I realize, okay, so this is something I should not do. I always get critical feedback and see where I could improve. But so, I mean, generally, I'll just keep doing what I do. I love what I do because I think YouTube is one of the best place where, because fundamentally, I took a 1 year break off life because, you know, life happens. And I was thinking, how do I impact the most people while not burning myself out? And I realized that YouTube is a very good way to scale this. And I'm happy doing this. So I don't see myself stopping anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I noticed like doing a YouTube channel, I never anticipated myself like spending so much time in it, you know, just like putting out videos. But once you start to see the impact and, but also the relationships, like, you know, you start to connect with people and you start to like, I almost like feel the relationship, the connection, you know, with the people that are watching. Like how do you deal with both the positive kind of sides of it where, you know, you have that connection, but also, you know, the negative, you know, feedback, the trolls, you know, the skeptics, you know, like how do you process all that?
Oh, that's just pretty simple. You can purely see if someone is really trying to make a point across which you did something wrong, and that is totally fine. Regarding the trolls, I'm fine because actually, if you're looking at the YouTube algorithm, it's a I hope the trolls don't hear this because they will stop doing what they do. Because if they comment something bad and you have some kind of argument below that, actually go for the algorithm. So go ahead and shoot me. I'll just be happy watching it. Thanks for contributing to the algorithm.
Got it. Yeah, I hear you. Do you think a year or two from now, what will your channel look like? Will it be kind of mostly Tesla, or will it expand to more investing to other, you know, companies, or kind of what's your kind of direction, you think?
A year from now, actually, the truth is I feel that the stock market is a little bit high, but it's not like high. And I'm still looking for undervalued assets around. And lately, I've been looking more into the crypto space. And you see like Jack Dorsey buying 50 million. You see like a lot of public listed companies setting aside into crypto. So I'm really researching deep into that. And probably I may let go some positions to go into crypto. I mean, I do have like one or two coins, but
got it.
Not really strong into that. Yeah.
What like I'm also researching crypto quite a bit recently. Like how are you researching? What are you reading? You know, who are you listening to? Have there been any really clear thinkers on crypto that you've kind of learned from?
Yes, there's Rao from Real Vision Finance. Then there is Anthony Pompeo. I can't remember his full name. Yeah, I've been looking at some of those people and a lot of white papers. I've been researching really a lot on this. So I'm like cutting back a little bit on my videos and putting more time into this research. Because ultimately, I want to provide a really good content and a very neutral like view on looking at crypto, because we cannot go like full blast like being biased. I don't see the point of being biased in anything, but probably get a very neutral point and objective point on why should we invest in crypto.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yesterday, I was tweeting some Bitcoin stuff, and then I do have a lot of questions, and I was asking people, like, I need to talk with someone, you know, about Bitcoin, you know, who can help me out. And some people DM'd me, and I was just spending like the whole afternoon DMing with like five or six different people. And I wasted my whole, I wouldn't say wasted, but I couldn't do any other videos because I was just talking about Bitcoin and crypto. What about crypto interests you? Is there anything particular about it?
The key main factor I have in like crypto right now in my head is that if you're looking at every single asset class out there, like stocks, real estate, currency, gold, blah, 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 the whole space, every asset is inflationary. So if you are looking at money, you can print. If it's property, it's because we have property tax on it. So that becomes inflationary. So let's say you get a 2% tax on your property, and assuming the property price is not moving, essentially in 30 years or 40 years, your property is worthless. You paid off everything. So, I mean, everything is inflationary. The only thing which is deflationary is Bitcoin. Because it comes to an end, it comes to a stop. So that is pretty awesome. There's no way you are going to print more Bitcoin after the end date. I think the end date is 2140. Yeah, looking at all this, the key factor that, Bitcoin to me right now in the crypto space is, I don't look at what Ethereum or all the other stuff. I don't really care. The Bitcoin takes up like 99% of or 90% over. I can't remember the exact number, maybe 92% of the entire crypto space. It's like when you are looking at like companies like with that kind of mode, they already surpassed the 10 billion market cap. So they will be there permanently. So now my thesis is how is Bitcoin going to fail? So this is what I'm working around now, and probably I'll be doing some videos on crypto in the future.
Have you thought about like the governments cracking down? And I'm not talking about like this year or the next 5 years, but let's say hypothetically, Bitcoin really grows big. Let's say, you know, $1 trillion market cap. I think it's what, 200 billion right now. But let's say, you know, it grows 5 times or even 10 times. And let's say there's also a whole network of other cryptos that allow you to do payments and transactions like Tether to Bitcoin and all this stuff. So there's a whole crypto world. And I'm always curious, like, because I'm thinking, let's say 10 years down the road, hypothetically, billions and billions, or if not trillions of dollars, let's say hypothetically run through crypto, through some decentralized manner, how are governments going to like collect their taxes that they need to, you know, sustain their huge rising debts over time? And I would imagine that if there's so much money that's going around, you know, decentralized and so-called private, the governments are going to freak out, the big governments especially, you know, they're saying, hey, we need more tax revenue. You know, our debt is like, you know, increasing, and, you know, let's outlaw, you know, all Bitcoin transactions and all, you know, withdrawals and all whatever, you know, within the Bitcoin network of all of our citizens. So the US does it, let's say Europe does it, China does it, a bunch of other countries join in. And they all, like the major companies, start their own crypto, right? Or their own government, right?
Yes, like Libra or stuff, yeah.
Yeah, or the federal, you know, reserve-backed US government crypto. And they require all financial transactions to go through, you know, their ledger, right? Their blockchain, in a sense, so that they can tax all of transactions, right? That seems kind of... It seems like the inevitable path almost to me, but I don't like that path because it's not very optimistic to me, you know? It's kind of like dystopian in many ways. So I want to believe in Bitcoin that it has potential to change that scenario, but it's hard for me to really see a strong possibility that the government doesn't use crypto and AI and technology to gain more control, right? And to tax their citizens even more. I mean, what are your thoughts on that issue?
Regarding the government, yeah, I totally agree. That scenario is going to be quite tough for the crypto world. But I believe in one thing: people will out innovate and play around stuff. Like do you remember like the days when Napster was around and all this peer to peer thing? You cannot stop it. Crypto is like this energy force inside the internet world. It's like an energy force. There, people, if you have internet connection, somehow you will be able to trade Bitcoin. My biggest issue, the biggest problem is you need every government in the world to ban it. Now, let's say you have one government that allows cryptocurrency exchange I believe there is still a way around it. So to bet with, so the thesis that this will, I mean, with governments will, I mean, fundamentally the world, governments has never worked together. Before, the whole world has never come together for a single clause. The only time I saw the world coming together to do one thing right is in the movie Independence Day, I don't see governments doing that, and probably that would be my bullish case for Bitcoin.
Got it.
Yeah.
I mean, like with the US, like they already have such a strong web around the world in terms of finances, like with. Like just in the past decade, like the US has released all these additional laws like FATCA and different reporting compliances where every single bank that gives, let's say, US citizen a bank account, basically, to put it short, they need to report that bank account and how much that person owns in actually that bank account to the US government. So the US government has all of these like worldwide web of restrictions and they are holding these countries and banks all accountable, you know, to fulfill their reporting requirements. And so as a US citizen, it's extremely difficult to set up a foreign bank account and hide it from the US government because it's against the law, especially if it's above like $5,000 or $10,000. And these banks, is against the law for them not to report it. And so already, like just in the past 10 years, the US has done like this crazy grab of international global power in the financial system that most people don't know about. Like no one talks about it, you know, what the US is doing behind the scenes. And so like with that, like I wonder if like people like, I guess underestimate how much the US and other governments will follow the US, how motivated they really are to catch like tax evasion, you know, people, or to catch people who are hiding money. And it just seems like the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, it's going to get more intense. You know, with more technology, yes. more AI, the government's going to reach out more of their power. And like you're saying, like, hey, you know, people will out-innovate, right? The government. But even with Napster, like the argument is like they worked for a while, but then didn't like the government crack down because like, you know, all these music labels were, you know, complaining. So then they all got into lawsuits. And so basically yes. we have no more, or Napster's that business model died because of regulation yes. and laws. And so in a similar way, if the government, if the US and some major companies outlaw Bitcoin and like, and 70% of the world that say, and their citizens can't use it or else they go to prison, then it becomes like mm-hmm. a fringe financial system for yes. like the third world. And it no longer becomes maybe like a store of value for the first world, you know, citizens. So in that case, is that really like a bullish case? Like, can Bitcoin sustain its valuation, you know, or does it just get marginalized into more of a third world transaction system outside of the first world, you know, financial system? What are your thoughts?
I guess it becomes third world. Do you know that the unbanked is a really big industry? The unbanked, the third world, is a really huge industry. It may be even be bigger than the first world. But I mean, talking about the number of users out there.
Sure.
So either way, it's fine. I don't see that. That's why for me personally, as I do my studies into crypto, I would not go like 100% into crypto, but yeah. I will probably as a hedge, like, maybe I now have a 1% position. I may move it up to like, 5% position, something like that. And I'll probably stop there. Because do not bet against the US. You guys are amazing. Yeah, by the way, I don't address the issue about, you know, you were mentioning that the US has a web on if you're a US citizen. Because here in Singapore, I do get a form, and I believe a lot of people do get such forms where you got to declare that you are not a US citizen.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the whole thing. Yeah. If you're a US citizen, and all these banks, they're scared to. Some banks actually don't even want to open up a bank account for US citizens because of all the reporting requirements. You have to report to the US government, yes. all this stuff. So that's why they'd say, "Are you a US citizen?" If you are, they have a lot of a different track for you, you know, to prove like yes. all your citizenship and reporting, etc. Yeah.
I have a tip there, but probably. You could look at, there are a lot of, maybe I put it across this way. You know, there's this one of the co-founders of Facebook. I can't remember his name. He moved to Singapore. So that is one of the ways to be more tax efficient.
That's true. Yeah. Yes. Get another citizenship.
Probably I don't want to say too much about this. Probably it's one of the ways.
Yeah. It's interesting, like India, like is an interesting case because there's a ton of unbanked in India, but on the flip side, the government is really taking a hardcore stance on money where they're trying to get rid of cash because ultimately a lot of this stuff comes down to government control, taxation, you know, like if the government can't get enough revenue, then they get unstable because they can't spend enough to make people happy, right? And their debts grow. And so India is like trying to reduce their cash. And that's why like they've required, you know, this demonetization thing where they require everyone to pull in their cash, to deposit all their cash, right? And they'll give them new denomination of bills. And part of that is to make the cash system more efficient, but part of it is to get rid of the black market, you know, for cash.
And so they can track it.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything is about tracking. Yeah. So even India with, you know, hundreds of millions of unbanked, it's like they're so aggressively going against cash and they're so aggressively going for tracking of all financial transactions. And I'm thinking like, how does Bitcoin deal with that? Like, it just seems like inevitable that India comes up with their own crypto and tracks all financial transactions. I would love for something else, something different to happen, like an alternative financial system, so we don't get put into that type of surveillance and, you know, government control. I request, can you do a video
off my head, whatever you just mentioned, it will eventually happen where the governments will track all digital currencies. You are looking like 10, 20 years down the road, It will happen. Like central banks will start to okay. So the process is the central banks will start to roll out central banks crypto. I mean digital cash,
Exactly, yeah.
and they will kind of like let everybody ease into it first before everybody goes into it. So I see a 10-year timeline. Everybody's going to this. So there'll be two worlds where there will be the government issued one and probably the crypto world. How do I see Bitcoin against that? This is a really I cannot find a perfect answer for this, and I cannot come to a conclusion yet. But this way, I'm monitoring the space. And right now, Bitcoin, the market cap is about 200 billion, and gold is about 10 trillion. And we is like I do not see. I always see that the Bitcoin will eventually surpass gold's market cap. I mean, it has to happen. And if it reaches there, probably the central bank will start to panic, and you see a lot of governments coming together and maybe shutting the thing down. I'm not too sure exactly what will happen, but I will not rule out the government doing everything in their power to stop this.
Got it. I'm curious, moving on to Tesla, like how did you first get interested in Tesla? Like you're saying, you go back from 2014 or 15, like what caught your eye? Was there any like articles or story or, how did you first start researching?
Oh, I love cars. I
Really?
love cars. I research a lot in the cars, and the funny thing is, once I saw a Tesla, my love for ice cars just died.
What kind of cars were you into before that?
Actually, one of my favorite cars I used to own is a Honda S2000.
Nice.
It was one of the most powerful naturally aspirated engines, and CC for CC was quite high horsepower, and I really love that car. Just to let you guys know that everything in whatever you guys pay for when it comes to Singapore is times five. So
Is
let's
it re
say
is it really times five? Wow, that's crazy.
it's times five. It's crazy. At least 4.5. Okay, at least times 4.5. A Toyota here costs about $100,000.
Like a
It's
Toyota,
crazy.
a Camry or something, or
Camry will cost us. I'm not too sure, but I know it's at least about maybe 120,000.
wow.
I won't be surprised if it's 150,000. I have a rough gauge. I can't remember, but it's probably like times five.
Wow, so how do people afford to buy a car there and drive it?
I'm still asking myself, like, what the heck? I mean, for me, I live quite a I have a above average salary, but yet buying a BMW in Singapore, let's say I'm just going to buy a 3 series BMW, and that sets me back about let me just do a rough calculation. It's equivalent to about $200 per day ownership in Singapore. It's about there, about $200 per day. I think I did a video on this before, but a 3 series is roughly $200 a day.
Wow, so that's like what's $6,000 a month?
$6,000. I'm not maybe about that, because I'm calculating the full thing, because our cars in Singapore only last 10 years before we need to there's a certificate that we need to do. So anyway, cars are really expensive here, and how do we afford it? I'm still like why the heck? I mean, maybe people don't count. They look at most people look at their salary. Okay, this is my salary. I can set aside half a portion of it for BMW 3 series, because I guess in the Chinese society, I think significance is quite important, the face value that you have. That's why probably they buy that car to tell people that they are successful. In especially in Singapore, it's the most competitive country in the world. So maybe people do that. I don't see the point. Most people will be surprised, but I'm driving a van. I don't see myself. I used to drive a car and stuff, but since I got into investing and stuff, I realized, hey, look, I'm burning that amount of money. Imagine if I could spend $200,000 to invest in stocks. I'll eventually pay off my car and stuff. So I just got down driving to a van, and most people still can't believe I drive a van, but I do drive a van.
No, vans are great, man. Like actually this is actually a camper van, like a big it's a 25-foot camper van right now. I film all my videos in
Cool.
right now. And
Oh,
yeah, my
nice,
family and I,
nice.
we live in it like half the year this year. It's like half the time we're actually camping in it and traveling all around. So it's vans are cool, man.
Nice. Van life,
Exactly, van life, underrated.
yeah, super cool. And Starlink will help you a lot because you can just plug the antenna on top.
Starlink is like the missing piece to my whole setup here, you know? It's like that's the one thing that if I have Starlink, then I can go to any like national park or any site anywhere, you know, get instant connection. That's all I need,
Nice.
yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Okay. So sorry, you were saying.
No problem. So yeah, going back to like how you got interested. So
Yeah.
you're into cars and Tesla kind of stuck out, and then what happened with that?
Yeah, so when Tesla came out, you know, as usual, I'm always quite skeptical. Yeah, I need to see you start building a lot of cars first. So I saw the first Roadster. It was in Singapore. They were displaying here, and I liked it. I liked Lotus previously. I just like cars, but as the more I dig into when they released the Model S, I kept looking at it for a long time, for 2 years. In fact, Model S came out in 2012, 2013. So I did look at it. But I didn't really got down into like, you know, it didn't really sink into me at that point of time. But as I said, the more you read into stuff, the more you research into things, the more you get a neutral point of view. Like you just get away from the media and stuff. Once you really sit down and view things from first principles, you realize, hey, this is the way to go.
Were you able to like test drive a Model S at all anytime in Singapore, or it was just like too hard to find?
I actually did approach the companies in Singapore that is selling. Although in Singapore we can buy a Tesla, but it's not through Tesla directly. So a company will import the car from UK, and we will sell a secondhand Tesla. I actually did ask them, but they said no test drive. So I until now I have not test drive any Tesla yet.
What was
But
it?
I was supposed to. Sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, I was supposed to test drive in Japan. But I didn't have time for that. So probably when the economy opens up, COVID dies down on stuff, I'll probably go Japan or Taiwan to test drive a Tesla.
Got it. So when was that turning point where you're like, wow, I need to get some Tesla stock? Like what happened and when was that around?
When do I? That was about 2017, about there. So 2015 through 2017, I was just buying, selling. Yeah, we all as investors, we go through that. We thought, you know, buy low, sell high, genius move. No, that's not. I think after a while, you realize that if you're just buying, because I did many kind of funny investments before. I tried crappy stuff. I tried day trading. I tried everything. In the end, I found that, you know, buy and hold, do nothing into good companies do make me the most money. Like, because I did make a lot of money out of Apple and Facebook. The reason why I sold Facebook is because I see the growth, like, you know, like flattened or something like that. Apple, I don't see much innovations coming out, although I still like the company a lot. So I was just looking out for the next Apple or Facebook. And ta-da, here comes Tesla.
Got it. Before investing in Tesla, like I'm curious, like your background, like can you kind of go back a bit? Like, what were you doing? Like, I think one of your videos, you're saying you had a business. Can you just share kind of like, you know, what you've been doing in terms of job and business just for the past, you know, I guess 10 or 20 years?
I see. I started doing business. Okay, I'm 40. So if you work back time, about more than 10 years ago, I started doing business. I did all sorts of business. I failed in many business. I mean, but the thing is, business that you just need to do one or two correct, and that's all you need. So I was just doing businesses and probably running a few businesses at one time took a big toll on me. And you know, life happens. So. Yeah. So your question was, what's my
So,
history, right?
yeah, what kind of businesses were there? What were they?
Oh, I construction business. I had a manufacturing business. I had IT business. I had financial education business. I quite a few, like you talk about. I got F&B. Oh, F&B. That is no. I mean, for the viewers, if you are thinking of starting entrepreneurship into F&B, think hard, think twice, and really think very hard. It's a very competitive world. Yeah. So. Anyway, I tried all those and yeah, I did make quite a bit of money, but at the end of it cost a lot, like time. Like I should have spent a lot more time with the people that I'm closer with and stuff. I mean, this is one whole road, and I realized, no, this is not the way. Working to the day you die is really, when you're working like 16 hours a day, and you realize, shit, I can't do this for any more of my life, and I call it quits. Yeah.
Got it. I'm curious, is there some type of reason or meaning behind your Chicken Genius Singapore name?
Oh, a lot of people ask me that. The truth is there is nothing. There's not much meaning to it. If you look at, like, I always tell people, if you look at the brand Nike, does it sound like a shoe to you? Like Adidas, does it sound like a shoe? No, it doesn't. So the name wasn't really important. I guess in Chinese horoscope, we have Year of the Chicken. So I'm born on Year of the Chicken. Yeah,
Oh, okay, got it. That's the meaning. Or kind of, yeah.
and other than that, I just. I didn't really care about what I put down. Yeah.
Got it. So just putting together the ear of the chicken, I guess, and Genius Singapore. Got it.
Yeah, smart chicken. I don't know. I didn't want to sound too serious. Yeah.
Got it, got it. So I'm curious, with so I want to actually talk about Tesla, and I want to talk
Yes.
about China and the risks of doing business in China. Especially just as the US trade war kind of heightens and stuff. But before we do that, I actually want to go and talk about Lemonade, because I know
Ah,
that,
all right.
you've done a few videos on Lemonade, is right, an insurance company.
Yes.
And like I've been actually doing quite a bit of research on Lemonade as well. And I'm curious, what's your take? I know the stock has been hit a bit recently with some downgrades, and ARK Invest has come out and said that they don't like the company. They think it's what, a pretty just design. That's it. They don't really have any, competitive advantage. But it seems like, you have a lot of confidence in the company. Can you share kind of what your take on that company is? Like, why, where does your conviction come from? And do you, like, how would you rate your conviction compared to some of your other convictions, like let's say with Tesla or Square?
I see. Tesla, I'm obviously like upon 10, I'm like 10 upon 10. It's like, it's obvious. It is so obvious. The coming future is really very obvious. Not a lot of people are getting the hints out of that. Square, I'm like probably 8 upon 10, about that. But if you are talking about like Lemonade, my confidence level is about 4 or 5 upon 10, about that. Okay. I mean, having said that, it's not that I'm having low confidence. To even have a 4, it's to me, it's much better than let's say like a Disney or stuff. I'm more bullish over Lemonade over Apple. The reason why, or even like Disney, the reason why, if you are looking 10 years, I don't think Apple can times 10 in the next 10 years. I do not see Disney or what times 10. So it calling, I mean, my confidence level is 4 upon 10 because I have this confidence that Lemonade should times 10 in the next 10 years or so. Okay, so why am I so confident? It's number one, it is they've done it. They people like their product. They have proven that their product works. They have proven that they can scale. So now it's purely based on management. Regarding what I mean, the fundamental core of every single product is something people forget about investing is that it can be the financials might be horrible, but if a lot of people like the product, the stock price will just go up. I forgot what's the actual name for it, but if a lot of people know about this product, naturally the stock price will go up. It's somehow that's how the investing world works. Most people are quite simple-minded. So regarding Lemonade, I think I addressed before ARK Invest on what they talk about the reinsurance and stuff. I believe that I mean, okay, reinsurance is basically you use a little bit of money to leverage up, maximize. But I feel that that is the way that Lemonade should do their kind of investment, so they become less capital intensive. So they put the risk onto other investment comp I mean, other insurance companies. And for such a small company, I mean, that's the you don't have that kind of cash and that kind of capital to not do that. So I'm totally fine with that risk, and that is something that everybody is pointing out. Like when Tesla first started, they say they need to build a gigafactory. Everybody were laughing at them. So if you are looking at the gigafactory scale and Lemonade's reinsurance, probably the way how I address it. But I do get where ARK is coming at, where they don't really have a mode, and I agree that they don't really have a mode. So now it's basically based on execution on the team to get the AI smarter. I mean, insurance has been the same way for many years, and probably if you are looking at a lot of companies trying to do the AI game, rushing to this AI game with insurance, Lemonade is ahead. It's not easy to IPO a company like that. I don't talk about as like special purpose vehicle, that Nikola thing. No, I don't believe in that whole reverse IPO stuff. So that's why I'm bullish about Lemonade and confidence on 4.10. So my thesis is that you put a little bit of money there. In fact, my very first video, I told everybody is that I'm going to go in at three different levels. And once all three levels activated, because I'm very, very sure that the stock can go up times two, times three, or drop down times two, times three. It's normal for an IPO company. So this was what I did. And I'm still holding on to it. Nothing has changed.
Got it. Yeah, Lemonade is like, yeah, I agree. Like Tesla just is like this, at least for me, and it seems for you, like just an obvious, like no-brainer. As long as there's no like really big catastrophe or something, but like Tesla has just, they've already released an amazing product, have brought it to scale, and now it's just like a matter of iterating, bringing down costs, refining, expanding into new product markets. It's like, it's not like starting a new company again. It's they just need to roll what they've already been doing, you know, for the past 5 or 10 years. And it just is like, you know, pretty obvious. But for Lemonade, their growth is amazing, right? It's hard to see a company growing that fast. And like their model is interesting, right? Putting the customer first, using AI, being super efficient with AI. Have you noticed though, like one of my question marks with Lemonade, and by the way, I do have a position, and the thing that kind of convinced me to have a position is there was a interview that the CFO did at this Barclays like online conference, and he really hit it out of the park, in my opinion. He like really was able to answer all the questions and bring like a really clear case of how Lemonade is making money, how they're going to grow. And it's just, I was impressed. I mean, it was like one of the best CFO interviews I've seen far.
Yeah.
But one of the question marks I have is like, Lemonade says they have such a great AI advantage and they collect like so many data points when a person signs up. But I'm like, how do they get all that data? Like, there's not much you do. You just answer some questions. Like how are they getting so much data in the signup process, right? Compared to any other companies, like they don't own like a social network where you're spending browsing, like, you know, days and days on it, or they're not Twitter where they know all your interests, or they're not Google where they, you know, they know what you're searching for. All they have is like a few minutes where you're just signing up, right? So how are they getting their AI? And if they are getting the AI from themselves, right, then is it just like how they're scrolling or what they're typing in, or are they buying data?
If I'm not wrong, there is video too. You need to talk into the video too, if I'm not wrong. Yeah.
Is that for the sign-up?
I know the claiming process is video.
Yeah, I know for the claim process it has video.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the sign-up process. I guess maybe that's part of it.
Maybe I'm wrong there, but I do know that the sign-up process, they do collect your data points. Maybe I got the sign-up process there wrong. Yeah, but let me say that they do collect like how you click the time of the day and stuff. Mm-hmm. I guess humans generally have roughly the same patterns, and they'll try. So my biggest against them, right, it's they lie about the AI, because you never know, like you see a Nikola lying about stuff. So the only thing that I will see that what they're doing is that they're lying about the AI. So that's why my confidence is 4.10. Other than that, I like the way they explain the execution. Why are they using AI? How they use certain AI point. I mean, it always sounds good, but I mean, coming as an engineer, I mean, as I roughly get it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, my second kind of reservation is the claim process. Like I was reading through hundreds and hundreds, actually my wife was reading through hundreds of, it was after I told her, hey, I got this much lemonade. And she's like, oh, okay, let me look into this. So she was reading all these reviews in the App Store for the lemonade app. And she's reading through all of the reviews. Some of them are good, but then there were quite a few that were like 1-star reviews complaining about the lemonade claims where they had put a claim in and then Lemonade denied it, and they're all complaining about it and how they can't access, they can't call a person. Like everything is just through this app and they don't even answer, right, the questions. And I was thinking about it, I'm like, a lot of confusion from the claim processes, I think it's because Lemonade has to work with these reinsurance, like reinsurers, and they have to, because they're partnering together with other insurance companies to prop to for the liability of certain claims, that they have to follow, they have to agree on guidelines, like Lemonade and these reinsurers. So they agree on this similar kind of underwriting guidelines. So when they process the claims, it's not that Lemonade has a lot of flexibility where they can just make up their own rules. They have to kind of abide by the rules of the underwriter or the reinsurers as well. So it kind of makes it a little bit like, I mean, it kind of feels like, I don't know how much they're reinventing insurance, you know? I'm sure they're bringing down the cost with renter's insurance and they're making it easier to sign up and easier to process the claim. But the big question mark is like, yeah, are they going to be able to really reinvent insurance, but also not just for renter's insurance, but for like auto insurance and life insurance and other types of insurance? I mean, do you think they're going to be able to expand to these other areas?
I think regarding the claims wise, if you are denied a claim, obviously you'll get a 1-star. I mean, yeah, who will give you a 5-star after you?
That's
Oh,
true.
you did a good job denying my claim. I mean, that's not gonna happen. Regarding auto insurance, okay, for Lemonade, what I did is, I know this might sound crazy, but I actually watch every single interview available on the management. I watched it, I dig through it, and I kind of like try to sit in your mindset. So sometimes, I mean, I always norm, I mean, I don't know, I always bring up Nicola, but if you are watching Trevor talk, you know that is bullshit. Yeah, so like Elon, when you watch him talk for hours, you will kind of get a sense of management, the sense, the man. So regarding Lemonade, I watch hours and hours, and so far, I'm not saying I have 100% accuracy, but the management is pretty good so far. Not much red flags, the way they answer questions, the way they want to give value and stuff. So regarding going back to what you said about moving on to other kind of insurance, I've heard in one or two interviews that they are not going to auto insurance because they know what Tesla is doing. So they are not even touching that. Probably they might want to go in health insurance not so soon. They want to, I think one thing good, they're going to expand on pet insurance. I think that is pretty good. Pet insurance, the untouchable, I mean, the missing pieces that the big companies are not doing yet. And yeah, slowly see them work the AI, you know, make it smarter. And probably over time, if they are more confident in the AI, they might do so with the, I mean, they might go into health insurance. But I'm quite sure it's, auto insurance is a no-go for now.
Got it. Yeah, I was watching their IPO roadshow video. It's like about 50 minutes, and they have all the management talking. And like the first time, I was very impressed. But then after the fourth or fifth time, because I was like editing some stuff, I was watching it over and over. I have a lot of questions actually for management. So
Oh,
yeah,
I
hopefully
see.
one day, you know, I'll be able to like, you know, probe them. I'm curious about a Square. I'm also, you know, very curious and interested about that company. And I'm curious, like you're saying you have an 8 out of 10 conviction out of Square. The longer I hold Square, because I do have a position, the more kind of skeptical, I wouldn't say skeptical in terms of, I think they're a great company. They have potential to grow. So I would say like before my conviction was maybe like 7.5 to 8, but recently it's kind of going down to more like 6 or 7, maybe like, you know, I think I again, that's actually pretty high in my book, you know, to have a six out of 10 conviction. But I just see so much a few of my reservations. I'd love to hear your kind of take on this, because I don't have a lot of people who can like kind of probe and get deeper into this stuff. But some of my reservations are, first, Square doesn't seem to be like executing as well as they could be. Like when I look at PayPal, like I don't even think PayPal is a great executing company per se, but at least they have PayPal checkout on like all these websites where you just click checkout with PayPal and you just type in your password and then you could pay with PayPal, right? And it can even do recurring transactions. It's just a super easy way to buy something online without having to know your credit card. And when I look at Square, I'm like, where is Square? You know, like how many years have they had to do something like that? You know, and sure they might have some, you know, efforts, but it's not, it hasn't been that successful. Right. And like Apple's doing that. Google's trying to do that, right? The checkout button. And then you have Shopify trying to do that. But when I look at Shopify, I'm like, wow, that company is executing like crazy. Like I read their annual reports. I'm like, wow, these guys like really know what they're doing. And they have like a clear vision of, you know, trying to get people, anyone to be able to start an online business, right? Super easy, super fast. And they're doing the whole thing. They're letting people jump on, get their, you know, products up, get their website up, get payments. Shopify will take care of it. Check out with Shopify, you know, send receipts, you know, do recurring. They'll even ship the product for you, right? They're trying to get into like more of the fulfillment by, you know, Amazon type of model. So they'll ship it and deal with your returns. And I'm like, that's ambition, you know? Like, I like that ambition of Shopify and the execution. But with Square, I'm kind of like, if you take away their Cash App, right? Their Cash App is obviously, to me, the highlight of their company. But if you take away their Cash App, then it's like, this company is a little bit like under executing compared to, you know, Shopify and compared to some other companies. And the big kind of company that is out there, I think, is Stripe. And I think Stripe is on the level of like Shopify in terms of execution, where Stripe is, because like I come from a more of a developer world where, you know, I run a team with who does software and we know APIs and all this stuff. And Stripe is on like another level. Like they know how to execute. They know how to make good products. Yeah, and
I agree.
Yeah, and
Stripe is amazing. But I think you cannot invest in Stripe, right?
I've been trying to invest in like privately, like through their secondary markets. But Stripe is so restrictive. They will crack down on, you know, people who are trying to buy secondary shares. So, but I'm thinking, my guess is Stripe will IPO within, I don't know, 6 to 12 months at the latest. But I'm thinking like you have Stripe, and Stripe is so focused. They have so much focus and clarity and ambition. Like they started out right with credit card payments online, and then they went with whole like recurring and managing invoices and doing payroll. And now they're even doing like business analytics where you can like map out your operations and forecast, you know, where your business is going and make decisions. They have a whole platform now for like data, basically analytics for companies. And when I look at Stripe, I'm like, wow, that company knows how to execute, right? So when I compare Square to Stripe and Shopify, I'm like, man, it's like, you know, it's like, it's kind of like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I mean, what can you say to me, like in terms of, like how do you see Square, and how do you justify, you know, their execution? Like, is it good enough, or can it be better?
Actually, I totally agree with everything you just said. I see your same points too. But probably where I come from Square is, so Square, okay, so like PayPal, they have the checkout button. Apple's going to do that. They bought recently another company to do that checkout stuff. Everybody's going to do that checkout thing. I do not want Square to focus on that checkout stuff. I mean, I don't invest in a company to go and compete with all this stuff. First, I want a company to play on their own level. So that is my bullish thesis for Square, because they are playing on a totally different level. You see PayPal copying them, because I think Square bought 50 million Bitcoins, and a few days, I think a few weeks later, they announced, I'm going to Bitcoin too. So what Square is focusing on is, it's not checkout buttons and like the shopping cart or the integration of their Square business site and the cash together. No, I don't think they are focused on that. Probably what they are focused on is how, as a user like me, like or anybody, will always want to put all their money inside there. Like how? So probably that's where their focus is on. So like you know, you can invest with Square app. You can buy stocks, Bitcoin or stuff. You can even go overseas. Like now, I know between US and UK, if you have the cash app, you just go to UK and there's no such thing as for Forex market, you just do a direct conversion. So this is probably where Square is concentrating on, and I do not see PayPal doing that. I do not see Apple doing that. I do not see any other of them doing that. So this is why I remain quite high up there. But having said that, I still have my bearish thing about Square. So recently they reported revenue for Bitcoin or you know, the thing going up, but a lot of people, which I don't like that, is that let's say people transact $100 worth of Bitcoin, they count that as revenue. They don't count like commission as revenue, but they count as like I buy $1,000 worth of Tesla stock means that is revenue. I'm like, what? I don't get it. So that kind of like got to me like, why did you do they do that? But having said that, if you are looking, you strip away all that stuff, I'm still the reason why I invest in Square is because I see them doing something where everybody else is not doing in the payment sector.
Yeah, I noticed Zillow is also doing that, like they're flipping houses, but then they count the total revenue that they get from selling the house as like revenue when they should just count, you know, the profit or whatever. I noticed that with Square. Like for me, the checkout kind of button or experience is important or existential, I think, for the Cash App, because like it was kind of Elon Musk's like original PayPal vision, where it's like if you can create a company that if people put in money, they never have to like leave the system, right? Yes. Meaning they could just always buy something and also, you know, get that into it's one account for everything, right? You never have to go to another bank or another place. But in order for Cash App to move in that direction, and they need to move fast because there are competitors. So in order to move fast in that direction, Cash App needs to be the place where you could use your Cash App account for everything, right? And they have some of that where you can invest, right, and get your direct deposit for your salary or checks and, you know, pay your friends and stuff. But they're relying so much on using the credit card number for your Cash App account to do payments, where it's like, it's kind of a hassle. And that's where, like, I don't want to, you know, bring up my Cash App. If I'm at a website, I don't want to bring up my Cash App like account and read the credit card number and input it in. So I don't do that. I just go to PayPal. I just check out with PayPal. And
that's a good point.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like, of all the companies in the world in finance, Square should be the company who is the most motivated to keep the money within, you know, Cash App, right? Meaning, like, I should be able to go to almost any site and just check out with Cash App, you know? And it should be super fast, like one click, two clicks, and done, right? And therefore, I get my salary deposited into Cash App. I go anywhere, I click, 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 Cash App, done, done, done. Go to the grocery store, grocery store, Cash App, Cash App, done, done, done.
Yes.
That it should be the cycle, but it doesn't seem like they're really motivated or working on that cycle. So I'm like, what kind of company is this? You know, how are they going to compete against, you know, the Stripes, the Shopify's, and even the PayPal's, you know, who might be not as like visionary as, like, say, a Jack Dorsey and his management and his ideals, but maybe PayPal is a little bit more practical, you know, maybe they'll just copy and they'll just, you know, copy, you know, do Venmo and just expand. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, what's your take on all that?
My take is, I agree with you. They should do a better integration on that. I mean, don't make it so difficult to pay with Square. I really hope they do push more into that. But having said that, I still see their focus on their Cash App, like how to do that checkout. I mean the stocks and stuff, but you don't get to do that with PayPal, if I'm not wrong. I'm not too sure here in Singapore, but I don't get to use it here. I try to download Cash App on my app here. I need to switch to the UK store to download, but yet I still cannot use it here in Singapore. So I really do hope they do all that. But for now, I do agree that Square is a little bit expensive. So sometimes people ask me, is it good to buy now? I will just tell them that, look, I think it's a little bit high. In fact, in my last Square video, I think I told them it was a little bit high. I mean, I never expected now to reach 180. It's like,
Yeah, so
like what?
fast. It's so crazy,
That
huh?
shocked me. I was crazy. My buying price was 40 and now it's like 180. Like, that's too much. But I do more. I believe they're overpriced. I believe they're priced in to do more good things. And probably you might want to wait for some kind of early retracements. And I feel that Square, I need to see more from them. I really need to see more, like what you mentioned and all this. That's why my confidence level is about 8. But I like what they are doing. My most important point is that they are not doing what everybody else is doing. So, yeah.
Got it. I mean, you mentioned sometimes stocks are just doubling, tripling, quadrupling, especially this past year. Like, how do you process all this? Like, is it reasonable in your opinion with for example, the Fed or different central governments printing money, lots of money chasing around, stocks with low interest rates, having, very little other places to invest? Does it just all make sense that, growth stocks are just getting pushed up higher, or do you think there's like it can get overboard and there can be like, a big correction coming? Kind of what's your take on all that?
I believe that stock market is going to go a lot higher. The reason why is that you look at the world's economy. In the States, you might not feel it, but I'm out of the States, so I get to feel it. Everywhere else in the world, the stock market is crap. It's crap. In Singapore, our stock market, no matter what you buy, is going to go down. Yes, there's a few that goes up. But I'm talking about like real bigger market cap companies. And this is Singapore. We are talking about one of the biggest financial hubs in the world, where a lot of foreign investors park their money here. We have a lot of big funds here. Like Ant Financial is coming to Singapore. And I mean, it's we are a financial hub because of what's happening in Hong Kong. In the end, people will be driven over to Singapore instead. So you have Singapore, UK, and US. So we have quite a lot of money here. And I'm looking around like all over the world. Where are institutions are going to park their funds to grow their money? There's only one place in the world, which is the US, where there's innovation and stuff. I don't see a lot of institutions pumping money into China due to a lot of regulations and stuff. So what I see is more money flowing to the US. And I believe more and more is flowing, from what I can tell within the financial hub here, I talk to fund managers. In fact, I know quite a few very well-off people. They are parking their funds in the US. There's nowhere else to go.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, especially in the US, like the US tends to be so insular, right? They just focus on themselves. It's hard for people in the US often to understand the world at large. Like, it took me, like, in my 20s, I spent like half of my 20s, so over 5 years out of my decade in tw my 20s, living overseas. And I was able to kind of view the US differently, once I got to go in other cultures and other places. But I think people in the US don't, most of them aren't aware of how big the global financial market is, like how much money there is around the world. That's the first thing. And then they're not completely aware of how liquid and how global investing has become. Like, it's no longer just like people in China invest in China, or people in Japan invest in Japan. This is global. Like there's no barriers anymore, with investing. And then it seems like the third thing is people don't understand that the US stock market is kind of an anomaly. It's a different beast where it's has like the majority of the most innovative companies in the world. And the largest companies, the best brands in the world, these are global companies. And even companies who aren't even from the US, they try to list their companies in the US stock market, And so you have.
Well, we have a Singapore company listed. I mean, recently just went up there. They didn't list in Singapore. They went to the US instead. US is the place to go. Talking about that, I don't want to go really into much detail, but I'll get a lot of people into trouble. But a lot of people, like from rich nations or stuff, they will use Singapore as a hub to invest in the US because they find it really difficult to directly invest in the US. So that I think that's probably what I can say. So you have a lot of funds moving into US, and it is crazy. it's crazy. So for me, what I see is that I know you guys may think that the stock market is really overpriced, but I clearly see there's more money moving into the US more than ever, especially in a crisis. You see, people will start to panic, and when people start to panic, they will really start to research on what they really want to do with their money, and most of them will end up in the States.
Yeah, I think I was interviewing this this guy who runs a Korean YouTube channel just a week ago, and his channel is exploding, like 120 something thousand subscribers in 3 or 4 months, and he focuses on purely U.S. stocks, and his channel is all in Korean. Right, just to Korean people. And he says in Korea, like, the number of people investing in the stock market is just like doubling. And even Tesla stock, 1% of the entire company of Tesla is owned by people in Korea. And he's saying like the Korean stock market is flat over the past 10 years. There's like no appreciation in the Korean stock market. And he says people, you know, they don't have anywhere else, maybe real estate, but then besides that, you know, like the US stock market is like the obvious choice. And yeah, it's fascinating. It's not just Korea. It's like, you know, this is a global world we live in, you know, and it's happening
global,
all
yes,
around
everywhere.
The world.
I do have Japanese commenting on my channel too. And they were talking about, they also invest in the US stock market. So
exactly.
Yeah, it's everywhere. Yeah.
I'm curious, like, did you grow up in Singapore all your life?
Yes, I grew up in Singapore all my life, here all my life. Yeah, but I do like to travel a lot. So I've been to US like 2-3 times. Love it there. I try to travel a lot. I do spend a lot of time in, I would like to in the future spend a lot of time in Japan, Taiwan and US, yeah, or Canada. You know, I just love these places.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
When you come over here, hit me up. Yeah, we'll hang out or something.
Sure.
Let's go to Tesla. I'm curious about your thoughts on, let's say, risks of doing business in China for Tesla. I mean, on one hand, it seems like Tesla is like this huge potential, right? With, you know, so many people, the biggest luxury car market in the world. And Tesla's having this fantastic factory that's exceeding expectations. They're, you know, growing their factory, going to produce Model Y very soon. You know, they're making it cheaper in China than in the US. And it seems like so many things are finally going right for Tesla in China. And then this past week, we had this recall of like 30,000 or so Model S and Xs because of suspension. And I want to hear your thoughts on that first, kind of like, what do you think about that recall? Is it a big deal or is it not a big deal?
Oh, I think it's quite known in the Tesla community now. If you follow the Twitter, the big accounts there, that it's not a big deal. It's like, it was more like Tesla actually responded saying that it was more like they, instead of, either they do a recall or they do have a lot of paperwork. And this problem only happened for like 0.005% of the cars or something like that. So, yeah, so anyway, that wasn't a concern, but as usual, the media will blow it up. It's not a problem. Maybe it's just the Chinese government, I mean, the Chinese, like, doing paperwork in China is a pain. Trust me, I know that pain doing it in China, but so probably that's why they went to do the recall instead, yeah. But other than that, I don't see, okay, then a lot of people will kind of form like, ooh, the Chinese government will make life difficult for Tesla. Maybe I'll share you some like what I've done business in China before. I deal with them many times, and this is just my rough take. The Chinese government, so like, again, we approach this from first principles, like really like first principles. What does China want with Tesla? I mean, you just got to answer that question. And if you strip back everything, what China wants is they want to be a global car manufacturer. End of it. I mean, you strip away every shit that just happened, that is their ultimate goal. They want to be there. They missed it with Germany. They missed it with Japan. They missed it with Korea now doing a lot of cars too. And now China wants in on the this automotive industry. And there's nobody that can bring them there other than Tesla, right? So this is not going away. If they want, they will be constantly remain there. Okay, if you are looking at like governments going against Tesla, I want the audience to really know this. And I have not said this on my channel, but my source got to remain. I cannot say my source. This guy who told me he's a billionaire and he needs to be remain low. Okay, so he actually mentioned this to me. In China, they have ministers here and there, they head of states, probably like many ministers here and there. When you have a big person that comes and visit, like a very big person, usually one minister will go there and greet you. But when Elon Musk went there, there were two. So this is like he's a big thing, and the Chinese government love Elon Musk. They are not going to like screw him over. And okay, anyway, I don't think that's even in their dictionary or whatever. It's not gonna happen. Okay, in fact, they did so much to help him. I mean, just for a Chinese, I understand their culture. For two to appear, it is a big thing. And this is something that my billionaire friend pointed out to me. You have to understand that it is not a small deal. On top of that, you think of like Tesla. They banned the rules for Tesla. The Chinese government rewrote their rules for Tesla. It is 100% foreign ownership. It is crazy. And if you remember when they were building the Giga Shanghai, it was out of the free trade zone. So what did the Chinese government did? Hey, look, let's draw a free trade zone around Giga Shanghai. I mean, it doesn't get bigger than that. And talking about funding, all the funding they got from building Giga Shanghai is all from the local government-owned banks. And probably the government went, hey, look, just fund them. And they will probably yes to it. So if you're talking about governments like going to screw them over, I don't think so. If you're looking like strip away everything and like Chinese government want to be the manufacturing hub of the world, the thing is they are not going to be the they are not going to overtake Tesla. There's no way. There's a branding to it, and I don't see that as a risk at all. It's like it's not even
Interesting. Yeah, I kind of actually I want to actually I'd love to actually talk more about this China issue because I love to get a different perspective, especially someone outside of both US and China, so you can look at it maybe a little bit more objectively. How do you view China? Like, do you see them as what's your take? Like, how do you characterize China as a country? How do you understand China? Like, do you view them as kind of like this in a negative, kind of more slant, or are you more objective, more neutral with your view on China?
My view with China is the same as US and probably throughout the world. Well, Singapore, we are known to be neutral, but I am honestly neutral about it. The way the US does things, it has its own advantages and disadvantages. The way China does things has its own advantages and disadvantages. I don't I how what's my stand on China? China believe in a one person system. There's like if you are looking like I mean if you look at Jack Ma, he was the face of it. And when what happened, he came down. Okay, he came down and somebody took over. China is viewed as a country itself, so you belong to China. The good thing is if the leadership is good, the country will be perfect. It's like it'll be growing, growing, growing. But if you get Mr. Rocket guy, the country is going to go into shit. So it really depends on the management. So if you have good management, the country will fly. That's their way of doing things. I don't disagree with it, but I learn to respect different cultures, especially in Singapore. We live among a lot of races. We are brought up to be to actually live. We are forced into mixing with other races. If you are looking at our structure, in housing estates, there must be a percentage of this race, percentage of this race. You cannot have like clutter all in one area. So having looking at China and US, I don't hate them like what people say. While human rights could be better, but there's a lot of but you think about it, not they are the first country that got everybody out of poverty. And you're looking at the United Nations as this color schemes, and I mean there's this badge. I can't remember what is it. They're one of the first countries to get everybody out of poverty, and that is something to be if you weigh the good and bad, there's more good than bad.
Got it. Yeah, this is actually quite fascinating. Because in the US right now, there's this narrative that's going on between that actually both sides of the aisle, so both the, liberal and conservatives, both agree that China is like the enemy of the US. And it's like, in my personal view, like, I mean, I'm going to get a lot of people upset because
No, no problem.
they really believe this, actually. They really believe China is the enemy of the US, right? It's like the number one enemy. And in my personal view, a lot of that is like propaganda. A lot of that is media. A lot of that is like built up, to stir kind of emotions and kind of paranoia and different agendas.
Yes.
And when I look at China more objectively, and I can do that partially because I've lived out of the States for, a good chunk of, different periods out of my life. And also in college, I majored in this like unique major, which was it was called Political Economy of Industrial Societies, but I focused on Northeast Asia. So my whole major was studying political science, economics, the combination of that, like government and economy and history, but focusing on how the countries in Asia, specifically like Japan and Korea and Taiwan and even Singapore, all how all these companies were able to build their economies, after, from basically almost nothing. Like some of these countries were the poorest countries in the world, but they were able to build their countries. And so I was able to study that all throughout college and really go deep. And what I realized from that time was you have different types of governments that go in and out, right? Some are more, let's say, democratic, some are less democratic, et cetera. But one of the overarching themes is that every country that has come out of poverty into, industrialized nation, take, any of these, Asian countries that have come out, the overarching theme is this practicalness, like a practicalness to run the government and run the economy in a way that will grow the economy, Like it's not necessarily like an ideological type of politicized system. It's more like people agree on, both sides that, A, the economy is important, that we're gonna, take steps to grow our economy, and they all copy each other. Like all the Asian economies, like they have certain models, to build up their exports, all this stuff, and they copy each other, and it works, right? And a lot of it's driven by this practicality of, trying to improve their economy. And when I look at China, I see that like they're copying a lot of the other Asian countries, model of success in the past, and
Yes.
they finally said, "Hey, we're taking it seriously, the economy and growing." And we're going to do what Japan did, what Korea did, what Taiwan did, what Hong Kong, what Singapore, all these countries did. And they have this very focused practicalness, but yet they haven't really given up this whole, Communist Party, some
Yes.
certain ideals. So it's very confusing, to
Yes.
the Western world, especially to the US.
Hey, I will maybe give my input on this. I hope I don't offend anybody. Okay, because when it comes to politics, people get offended all the time. So
Exactly.
anyway, I'm just if you will hear Charlie Munger speak, why China was so successful? Because they practically modeled Singapore. Okay, so Singapore, we are going to politics. I'm going to die for this. But anyway, Singapore, we are a democratic society, right? Like US. But the truth is, there's only one ruling party for the last don't know how many donkey. If you study our history, we have only had one ruling party. Okay, as a Singaporean, do I like it? Yes and no. I wish there were more opposition here and there. That will keep them on their toes, right? You don't like slack on the job and stuff. But I understand when there's one political party in power all the time. I know US you have Republicans and Democrats keep switching here and there, but we are just one for the last, I think, ever since we were a country, right? It's good because we get to plan 20 years down the road and we know when we will be able to execute the plan. But you cannot do that if you keep switching parties, you know. So regarding to China-wise, yeah, they are able to execute so fast because they have one party and no competition, and they have the right direction. So is it right or wrong? Again, as I said, you can have a leader that is like the rocket guy, and that's it, man. There goes the country. Goodbye. Yeah. So maybe that's at least. Let's talk about like copying. That's what you're talking about, copying, right? And that was the tweet that actually got us to talk to each other, like something like that. That was yeah, about copying. Actually, I'll address this with everybody. I mean, it's not just applying to. We don't just apply this to Tesla and every other company. So, right, you must understand that what you know, every product in your world will eventually get copied. You just got to like, just got to sit in. You think back. Every good product will be copied. There's nothing you can do about it. Tesla's full self-driving source code. Source code and machine code is a different thing. You say you've done software, so you roughly know what I'm trying to say, right? The source code is from the States itself, but they will send updates through machine code to the cars itself. So the reverse engineer the source code is really difficult, but there's a slight percentage that it may go out. You may get another idiot at Tesla's headquarters doing that extraction of the source code. But then the thing is, you got to understand that. So what is the best defense? This is throughout like the entire like history of humankind. What's the best defense against copying? And there's only one answer to that, which is innovation. Constant innovation is the best defense for copying. That's the end. And the thing is, if the company stops innovating, the company is dead. So I'm really not too concerned about China copying. It's like it's not even a risk factor to me because Tesla is always innovating. So that's my take on copying.
Sure. You're referring to the, yeah, that someone was asking both of us on Twitter if we're concerned if, China or Chinese companies will copy Tesla being in China. I actually agree with you completely because, like, who cares if they have the source code? Like, Tesla has already improved on it, like, multiple times after, like, they're moving on to new versions. Like, who cares if Facebook source code gets leaked because it's different, like, radically different in 6 months, It doesn't, their old version isn't worth very much. Right, it's moving so fast. I think people don't completely understand how fast the software and technology is moving. It's not like a static product, It's like a secret design to this product, like the Coca-Cola formula. It's not like stealing that,
True. So the risk now is not even a risk now.
Okay, so I want to pose you this interesting question here. My concern with the US-China trade war is that with the rhetoric being tossed back and forth of like, let's say in the US, claiming that, China is the number one enemy and blaming China for lots of different things. I'm not going to say whether that's right or wrong, but then you have China also responding to rhetoric, but also maybe creating also their own rhetoric. I'm not going to say who started the fight, but it goes back and forth. And over time, like just in the past 4 years or even, past decade, like the relationship between the US and China is getting more fragile. And let's say in another 4 or 5 years, if this continues, but let's say even escalates further, the pace of insults and, all this stuff. And that's the thing. It's like China is a very like very shame or face, like reputation is very important, and for them like to feel like on the world stage that they're being harassed or insulted, etc. That means different. That's a different meaning in Asian culture than in Western culture. Like Western culture, you can call someone whatever, and they're like, "Oh, they call you something back." In Asian culture, it goes deeper. It's like everyone is, the mindset is everyone is intertwined, and when you break something like a very harsh insult, it breaks an intertwined web of relationships that sometimes can be very hard to repair. That's not necessarily in the Western mindset, like that intertwined relationship of culture that is more prevalent in the East. And so, what happens in 5 years? What happens in 10 years if this U.S.-China tension grows and grows, where they just, you know, the countries hate each other, and there's this, all this insults flying back and forth. There's tariffs going back and forth, and Tesla investors are nervous. They're like, oh my gosh, like, you know, like, yeah, China has already kicked out all these other companies. Like, when will they kick out China, or when will China kick out Tesla next? Like, what do you think about all that?
I see. I mean, if I don't, okay, let's talk about escalation onwards. Like, and while I agree with whatever you say, there is a risk to it, but I think the risk is really very low. Okay, if you think about what the Chinese like to do, if you watch the Netflix comedy, there's this stand-up comedy by Ronnie Cheng, you watch Netflix, which is very, very true. What the Chinese want to do is just trade. And they just want to trade. That's all. They want money. They want to trade. So if you realize all the response that the Chinese government have towards the states, or like whatever Donald Trump comments, they're just trying to play delay tactic. They're like, this guy is going on, doing his shit again. They don't really care that much. I mean, yes, although yes, face does play a part, but to be frank, the world kind of like numb to what Donald Trump is doing. If you're looking at the Europeans, you look at the Australians, you look at the whole Asia, we look at, you know, he's just him making noise again. Yeah, so I don't think it's as of now, I don't think it's a big concern to China. They know that because their political party, they know they're going to rule in the next, in their eyes, they're going to rule in the next 50 to 100 years. They just need to get past this Trump era. And probably you might get some person who is more friendly with them, and they'll work with that party again. So it's always there's always a balance here and there, and the Chinese government will play that balance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they just want to trade. They don't really care. You look at the history of China, they didn't really, if I'm not wrong, they didn't really start war. I don't think they ever started a war or went to war with anybody, unless like they being provoked into it, but I'm pretty sure they will not start a war.
Yeah, well, actually that history is pretty deep. Like, yeah, it's like, actually, yeah, Koreans would maybe disagree with you with that. Yeah, there's some tension there.
True,
other countries actually would disagree. But I'm curious though. I'm actually quite optimistic about the future of Tesla in China. And the reason is because I think China, being so practically minded, they understand some ramifications of kicking out a company like Tesla. Because in some ways, Tesla did no wrong. They, you know, applied, they worked with the government, they're, you know, hiring lots of people, and they're like a model player, you know, in the world, coming into China, working with the government. And for China to kick Tesla out and actually take over their factory, stop letting them sell cars in China, what that means is it's not just Tesla's out. That means like China has completely, you know, closed their borders, right?
Yeah.
Just one company or two companies, but to like the majority of, you know, the world, the biggest companies in the world. And
yes,
China like very, very like clearly understands that risk. Like they understand the as you're saying, the money part of that, how much money that will cost the economy, the future,
and the reputation.
Exactly.
The reputation for kicking Tesla out is going to be bad. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But on the flip side, is that China for over a decade has been very, very diligently working on building like their own block of friendly countries, you know, where they have been investing into infrastructure, into all these Central Asian countries, into other Asian countries, into Africa, etc. I mean, their web of influence in the world has grown dramatically over the past 10, 15 years. I don't think, like, especially people in the US, they don't understand this because they're not really exposed to what's happening around the world. But in other parts of the world, like China has deeply formed relationships through investment and, you know, things in many, many countries, and trade with China is huge. And so China is establishing in a way their own block of trading countries. And I wonder in 10 years or so, you know, I don't know, like if the U.S. burns bridges with certain countries, and maybe even certain Asian countries might side with China if trade is greater with China than the U.S., mm-hmm. I wonder if it would be possible for China to establish more of a Asia, you know, Central Asia, maybe even Africa, Asia trading bloc, where that emboldens them more to be able to stand up against the U.S. and kick out, you know, some countries. And maybe Tesla can be a casualty. I don't think it's a high likelihood at this moment, because yes. I do think that, you know, as you're saying, administrations change over time, the presidents, you know, whatever. And that's the other thing is, as you're saying, like, a lot of these countries in Asia, like, they're more long-term focused in some ways, very practical focused, execution focused. That's how they got like their economies up and running. They have clear 5-year and 10-year plans for the economy that go beyond just political preference, you know?
Yes.
And so in that sense, like, China understands that, A, there is a changing of the presidency of the guard, and, you know, there's some understanding that part. But what concerns me is that both parties are saying the same thing in the U.S. right now, that China is the number one enemy. And so I don't know where this is headed personally. It is a bit of a concern actually for me at this moment. And I'm curious on where this is headed in the future.
I mean, it's just my own personal point of view. I don't see China cutting the US out or any other countries within this region to cut the US out. It is so much more different to that. You must talk about like military ties, like Singapore, we buy our military planes from the States and stuff. There's a lot of, the US got a hole in the wall, and China is just like trying to grab into this hole. For them to fully like grab it, it's at least 10 years or so. But I don't think the world is so easily going to accept China. I mean, they accept China for its goods and trades, the money goes to them and stuff. But I do not think they will form that kind of, governments will not be comfortable because they are one regime. And because of that, that fundamentally is a culture difference, and they're not going to let it happen. This is just my own opinion. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, got it. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what happens in the future, 10 years, 15 years, you know, down the road, it depends on so many different things. You know, it's hard to predict that. But I appreciate our conversation, because a lot of times in the U.S. here, it's hard to have a conversation about topics like this without it getting so politicized, where people can't even talk with each other. They can't even listen to the other side.
I get it. In my comments, oh my God, I just did a video on, you know, of all the 300 million people, you have Donald Trump and Biden. Then, wow, the comments below went like, Biden is better, Trump is better. Boom, they went, I'm like, oh shit. I actually get you. But regarding the China issue, don't be too worried. This is just my take from a very neutral country, a country where we host Donald Trump and Mr. Rocket together. I'm just telling you guys, nothing too much to be worried too much. The Chinese government knows what Trump is. Trump is pretty simple to predict, you know. China virus, that kind of stuff. They are just playing the waiting game for the next president to come in. So don't worry too much. Yeah.
Got it. Cool. As we head to concluding our interview, do you have any hobbies or interests that, you know, kind of occupy your time outside of YouTube and Tesla investing?
I do a lot of outdoor activities, but looks like all of them is like kind of like I can't do it now because Singapore is so small, we're just a dot. So I love to snowboard, I love water sports, everything is gone. I can't do any of that. I love skydiving and stuff, but hopefully our economy opens and can start doing that again to feel alive. I'm stuck here.
Got it. Awesome. For my viewers, you can find Chicken Genius Singapore on YouTube. Just type in Chicken Genius Singapore, you know, his channel will come up. On Twitter, you're at, is it Pack Pack Chicken?
Yeah, Pack Chicken. Okay. That's the sound of the chicken. Pop. So I think serious. I never knew I would do Twitter that seriously. But yeah.
Are you, do you have any other social media handles you want to share to people?
Just this two is good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Again, I want to just thank you for the time. I love the conversation and, you know, chatting about random stuff.
Good conversation with you.
Yeah. Hopefully we can do it again. I appreciate it. Thanks for joining our conversation. It's an honor to share a bit of my experiences with you. I'd love to hear your thoughts on what was shared. Please share them in the comment section. Also, in the coming weeks, I have some interviews planned that I'm really excited about. If you want to keep updated, consider subscribing to my channel. I've also added a playlist to my channel called Interviews, and you'll be able to find all my interviews there in a single place. Have a great day, and we'll see you in my next video. Thanks.